Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
That's the official Contemporary Issues greeting. So we are going to be talking about Warren. It's chapter 4 this week.
Right.
He's read it twice now.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to be talking about chapter 4 of Neighborhood Church. The title of chapter 4 is Integrating Our Space. So that's another one of those. The chapter directly fits if we're talking about it sort of as a church institution, right? But we're talking about neighborhood church in terms of the way y'all are church in the neighborhoods that you're in, that you are sent out to go continue the mission of the church in the neighborhoods that you actually live in. So that really widens our footprint in terms of where the church's impact is, because not that many of us live in what could realistically be called this neighborhood, right? But all of us live in what can realistically be called the neighborhoods we live in. So we're gonna wrestle a little bit, I think, with what this sort of space idea means in our neighborhoods. Your homework last week was to thank someone that you depend on for something, someone whose presence or activity in your world actually makes a difference. Because we talked last week about the way that we can so often kind of go through life imagining that we don't depend on other people for things. Because instead of depending on people for things, we pay people for things. And so there's sort of there's a mental gap between the people we rely on and the way that we rely on them. Because if we're paying them for something, then it's a reciprocal relationship, right? But it's not the same, it's not the same character of relationship that we may have had back in the glory past when we could wander over and knock on the door and walk back home with a cup of sugar, right? You can still do that. Actually, like, that would be a really great way to go meet your neighbors, right? You know, come up with an excuse to meet them. Did anybody specifically find someone that they depended on? This doesn't even have to be someone residentially near you, right? Someone that you depend on and thank them and tell them how their work has benefited your life. Anybody have an interaction like that?
Well, I'll break the ice. As you know, the Casters and the Andersons and the Fitchers invaded Panama here in the last month. And, 8 days I was gone, there was a fair amount of snow. And our driveway is not level. There's a slope to it. I'm concerned about the volume slipping and falling. And of course, the sidewalk has to be done within 48 hours. So I have a young neighbor. He works at Schottenkirk Chevy. And he took care of the snow removal while Warren was enjoying Panama. And evidently, you guys had some snow, January 21st to 29th. And he is probably, I know he's young enough to be my son, maybe even my grandson. But even though we're different ages, mm-hmm. They just had a new baby, Henry. He's 4 months old. So I was very appreciative of, and he was more than, and he got a new snowblower. So he's more than willing. That helps. Yeah. He got a new snowblower.
Nothing like a new toy.
Yeah.
So, and you know a lot about this guy, right? You've got a lot of story on Henry's dad, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
So you've got
Colin. Colin.
Colin, there you go. So you've got different pieces of, you know, where he works, you know, a little bit about his family structure and what's going on in his life. You know that he's got a new snowblower, which is one of the things you can easily learn about your neighbors in the winter. You can identify the people with the new snowblowers, especially if it's their first one. Yeah. Marilyn.
When I went to, when Bob and I went to the caucus, I was seated in the same preference group as the person that I planned to contact and thank.
Look at you.
Right there. And, you know, there's all kinds of delays in those groups. So we had plenty of time to converse and thank her for, when we're gone, she like Warren has a neighbor that she, they watch our home and do this and that.
Yeah.
And we do the same for them.
Yeah. Excellent.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that great?
Love it.
Yeah. Good. So these are the kinds of, like, so I also, I didn't see people I already knew and was looking for at the caucus, but I met people that I didn't know live really close to me. And we have a geographically really small precinct, so everybody there lives really close to me, but we actually got to know a couple of people who are right on our block that that we wouldn't have gotten to interact with necessarily any other way, other than, like, you know, going to somebody's house and introducing yourself, right? Which is still, am I allowed to say this with integrity? I can't say this with integrity, but it's still true. That's a great way to get to know people, right? Like, go talk to them, right? I can't say that with integrity because I still haven't done my homework from a couple of weeks ago to get my connector to introduce me to somebody in my neighborhood that I don't know yet, because my connector already knows them, right? Now, a couple of you, Warren and Marilyn, are connectors in your neighborhood. And so you are in a slightly different boat, partly because dispositionally you're already out there getting to know other people in your neighborhood, just because that's a thing you do, which is great. You are assets, right? The guy with the snowblower is also an asset in a different way, right? He may or may not have been the one to go out and get to know Warren. If Warren hadn't gone to get to know him, I'm making assumptions about the backstory here. So some of you are actually the connector in your neighborhood. Some of you can depend on the connectors in your neighborhood. You know, both of those approaches are okay. So as we turn to integrating our space, and I'll talk about kind of what we mean when we say integrating our space. But I want to ask a question. If you were to roll the credits for your neighborhood at the end of the movie, how many of the people in your neighborhood would be listed as characters with names and speaking parts? And how many people in your neighborhood would be listed as extras? The people
I think
in your neighborhood,
bulk of mine would be extras.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I say that is we've been where we are for so many years, mm-hmm. that rather than be neighborhood, we are more out into other things that, for example, I probably wouldn't list very many people from Covenant as extras.
Uh-huh.
But I would on people on my street.
Yeah.
And a number of years ago, when Mary's and our last babies were born, just a few years.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But anyway, one of the things that we discovered was we had been, for all of our children, stay-at-home moms.
Mm-hmm.
And after the birth of our last babies, and we were kind of noticing the trend when they went to school, or preschool, that was how we got into being partners in sewing, because there were so many moms that had children the same age, and very few moms in our neighborhoods had children to begin with at that age. Right. I mean, prior to that, my kids had somebody to play with on the street. Mm-hmm. But when we had the last ones, then nobody was home.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And if they were home in the evening, or they did their stuff on the weekends, mm-hmm. it didn't allow for us to interact.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't. And then by that time, we're all involved in school. So now you're homeroom mother or Girl Scout leader or Boy Scout leader, and you just don't get the chance to interact with people on the street.
Yeah. So the that shift and you know, some of that is a life stage shift. Some of that has been a generational shift. So the difference between a generational shift and a life stage shift happens to the same person as they move through different ages. A generational shift happens to groups of people. So the change in family size and the change in the number of kids in a neighborhood, that's a generational change. It lines up in a lot of ways with a life stage shift. For y'all who have been in the same neighborhood along with the other people who are your same age, and you've gotten older and your kids have gotten older and everybody's moved out and you're still there. But the people who have sort of invisibly moved into your neighborhood also have fewer kids per capita than you did at the same time. That's the generational shift. And both of those things are happening. And you mentioned the sort of the church is characters in your story, and your block is extras in your story. And that's part of what we're going to talk about. And the way that your block has sort of become extras in your story over time, we're going to talk about sort of the effect of familiarity. That there are things that we do as a church that actually push back against familiarity. There are ways that we attend to each other that you don't necessarily attend to your neighbors on your block. And that actually is a piece of resisting that kind of that inertia of familiarity. So would anybody say that the people on your block are predominantly characters with names and speaking parts in your story? You would. Yeah. I want to live at your place. Because you're living in a setting that is, I mean, it's logistically different from the settings a lot of us live in, but you're also, it's socially different from the settings a lot of us live in. And so you've got people that you're crossing paths with who are in fact part of your story in your immediate neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. All right. I'm
two on the street and in a theater. So, and my street is very variety.
Yeah.
They even write their own plays. So.
Oh, hey.
Street busy.
Yeah. So you've got not only characters but actors and playwrights. So.
And they're getting, which is good to hear that, they're getting the use mm-hmm. of 20-year-olds to write plays.
Wow.
That's great. Yeah, live theater's not dead. That's a whole different layer of this. But it doesn't look the same as it used to. So. Okay, I'm going to read to you just a couple of paragraphs here that are quoted. This is on page 72 of the book if you want to read along. Or there's a little block quote set in. And they're quoting from a book, Why Church Buildings Matter. Why Church Buildings Matter. But I'm going to replace the words church with home. So, because of what we're talking about here. So, why your home matters. Tim Cool writes, story is all around us in virtually every aspect of our daily experiences, which means that our homes tell a story. Here are a few important questions to ask about your home. What story is your home telling? What story is your home telling? Are we intentional about the telling of our story through our home? Now that's maybe more of a specifically church question than a home question. On the other hand, y'all get sent out here every week at the end of service. We bless you and charge you to go out into the world as witnesses to the gospel that we share here, right? That's why I think we can talk about this book without being a church committee. Is our story, is the story we tell with our space congruent with who we are, who we think we are, what we believe and value, and whom we want to reach for Christ? Now that gets over into evangelism territory, which is a word that is really scary for us as Presbyterians. But again, every week we come, we gather around the gospel, and we get sent out into the world as witnesses to the gospel. We are even to use words if we need to. But we're sent out to live the gospel in our relationships with other people. So this is, I think, a valid question for us. So what story is your home telling?
Well, you know, a lot of homes have the big high fences all around, so they're saying, you're not welcome here, you know. Mm-hmm. Now mine must say, hey, come and rob me. I have a big open space. They can, from the street to my house, it's, you know, mm-hmm. I've had people take garden flowers and garden mm-hmm. poles out of my yard, and, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, anything I put out there, I think, is fair game, it seems to be.
So,
fences do keep people away, you know, you're not apt to make as a neighbor.
Right,
you know,
so one option in the story your home could tell is mine, right? Mm-hmm. This is mine. And so you're telling sort of the underside of a story, which is, people come and they take my stuff. There's also a story in putting something back out there, right?
Yeah, immediately put stuff back out. And so far,
that's a story.
So far it hasn't been taken, but what I had out there is gone.
Someone took my stuff and I put
and
new
in my
stuff
house,
out there.
They came in. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I don't have fences.
That's a story.
Maybe I should put one up. I don't know.
But that is a story right there, yeah.
Our neighbors, our former neighbors, wanted to build a fence to keep their dog in because it was climbing over the chain link. But he researched because he didn't want a solid wall. Mm-hmm. He's got board on this side and this, and there was a little space so you could see through and you could mm-hmm. talk to them in the backyard.
Yeah.
That was me. Mm-hmm.
So it's possible to make a specific choice in how you relate to your neighbors. Even when there's, you know, in that case it was keeping a dog in, a logistical need, you know, it could be a security need, it could be a practical need, but to think about how do I maintain a sense of neighbor even as I'm doing something that looks like blocking, that is physically blocking off space, yeah.
When Sue first said the fence means they don't want anybody to get in, mm-hmm. my first thought was, I don't want our dog to get out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, that is my neighbor on the very back. There is a chain link fence that was there when I moved in, and so she asked if she could hook her fence up to my fence to keep her dogs. You know, but yet you can talk over a chain link, you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But when those big, you know, 6-foot board fences go up mm-hmm. there.
They're called privacy fences.
That's right.
I know. Yeah. And you're not really wanting,
right.
know, people are, what is that saying to your neighbors if you put up
right.
a big...
Right. And there are ways to make decisions about that fence that also have to do with, you know, am I still present in the neighborhood, or have I fenced myself completely off? Yeah, Bob.
My question would be if you have the razor wire on the top.
That means you really want your dog to stay in.
Don't want your neighbors crossed.
Nobody come in. Yeah.
Well, when we moved in, our front yard had a low two-board white fence all around the front yard. And said, like, don't walk across my... I don't know. We weren't there long when we tore it down.
Right.
One thing, we had lived with a fence like that before.
In the backyard.
In the backyard. And it's a real nuisance to maintain.
Right. And a little low fence, it has no function.
Yeah.
And it's hard to maintain. Except that it has a function, right? It doesn't have a security function, right? Like a fence you can step over and your dog can step over, it doesn't do any good. But what does it do?
It has a visual function.
Yeah, what's that visual function?
It says stay away.
Right, this is my space.
Yeah.
It seems like people who have flowers in their yard, I mean, I don't know if they're friendly, but it just seems like they seem like more inviting.
Yeah.
Flowers in their yard.
Yeah.
We moved to Denver, Colorado. We lived in a big area, and our next door neighbors happened to be from Sweden, and we got to know them really well. And anyhow, her comment was she thought the worst invention ever made was a garage door opener. She said, in the morning, people hit the garage door opener, they drive out, they close the garage door. At night, they come in, close the garage door again, and you don't see them.
Right.
And there is a point to that.
Right.
You know? So.
We had a neighbor that would call at 10 o'clock and say, you know your garage door is still open? And on the corner where we are, it's like, okay, thanks, and somebody go down and close the garage
door. Yeah.
I've had that happen when I was alone, and I was very grateful for that.
Right.
For a neighbor letting me know.
Yeah, so there's a... You know, there are really practical pieces of how does our space relate to the neighborhood around us, including you live on a corner, and if you forget to close the garage door, then, you know, that's a significant security issue. Having a neighbor who will notice it and call you is a great security boon, right? Your insurance company should give you a discount for having that neighbor. Betty.
When you first started reading this paragraph, and you said that I wasn't supposed to use church, I was supposed to use my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I had trouble with that.
Okay.
Because I think, generally speaking, I think Covenant is pretty good in sharing our facilities with people who aren't our neighbors. I mean, physically, our neighbors. And I think we have a pretty good...
Don't forget, years ago you had Muslims worshiping in here.
Yeah.
In this very room.
I had somebody at Presbytery say it's good to see how your church is used.
I
didn't hear you. Yeah. What did you just say? I had somebody come up or tell me that it was good to see our church being used, not necessarily by only our congregation.
Yeah. So we can kind of use the church as like a metaphor, right? We can use this as an illustration for thinking about how our personal spaces are used. And so with that, I'm going to shift us over to the video, which is, of course, talking specifically about church, because that's who they produced it for. And we're just sort of interloping. So we'll watch this, and we'll talk a little bit about what the authors mean when they talk about integrating our space versus just using our space. Oh, stop it. You know, some people shouldn't be allowed to operate technology.
Hi, I'm Kren Van Dottenhoff, co-author of Neighborhood Church. Today I'm on the grounds of the Baptist Temple in San Antonio. This 80,000 square foot campus has a remarkable story, something you'll hear in a few moments from their pastor. But first, let's do an overview of this chapter 4 called Integrating Our Space. I'm sure you would agree that of all the assets that we have as congregations, our physical plants, our campuses, are some of the most powerful. And yet, how many churches go from Sunday to Sunday without maximizing their square footage to serve the neighborhoods around us? This is what this chapter is about. And it's even about churches that already have some existing partners under their roof. How are we integrating our purposes with them? Have we found common ways to listen and develop partnerships? Here's a quote from the book. Too often, we share our buildings without attention to long-term redevelopment goals. Examples of this are common. Preschools that employ massive amounts of square footage, but whose students and families have no real connection to the host church. Nonprofits that incubate on our premises without ever hatching hybrid projects in partnership with us. Boy Scout troops, 12-step meetings, yoga and Zumba classes, or other outside groups that have no cross-fertilization with our congregation or its mission. Let's put it bluntly. Integrated space means that we only share our facility with those who truly want to partner, contributing to the increased spiritual energy and redevelopment of our congregations. This is not selfish or self-serving. It is a simple recognition that if our sacred places are to remain as beacons of faith for generations to come, we must position them for the long term. In this chapter, you will hear some amazing stories of congregations that learn to integrate their space. Which brings us to the story of Baptist Temple in San Antonio. This unique congregation and its 80,000 square foot facility sit at the intersections of historic Anglo, Hispanic, and African American neighborhoods that have all seen economic decline. In his 2014 State of the Union address, President Obama designated this area as one of the first five promise zones, a national initiative to revitalize high poverty communities. When Pastor Jorge Zayas Bazan first arrived here, he said you could hear a pin drop from one end of the campus to the other. Let him tell you what has happened since then.
We're a church as part of a family of churches and service organizations that are utilizing this 80,000 square foot structure to reach our community, both physically and spiritually. When I first got here, the building was underutilized. It had at one time been the second largest church in San Antonio, or maybe the second largest Baptist church in San Antonio. But even then, it was being left empty Monday through Friday most of the time. And everyone around me had told me that one of the greatest assets of this church was the buildings that were well constructed and well maintained. Well, when I got here, you could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet Monday through Friday. And also, we had a huge utility bill that really concerned me, and there seemed to be no way for me to save money. So I led the church to decide instead to open our doors and see if we can use this church Monday through Friday, morning to night. So we have the thrift store and our food pantry and our community garden, which are all joint ventures of all the ministries in the church, including the schools. They all contribute to maintain it. They use it for education. And I look at it not so much as a food garden, but as a prayer garden. And it started slowly, but we got the word out that we wanted other congregations to meet here. We had the sanctuary and the smaller chapel and all kinds of big classrooms. And I know as a church planner myself, how difficult it is to find places to meet. So that was one way where we could help one another. And then we started the charter school. Came to us, I think, as by an act of God, because I was just surprised at how much they knew and how ready they were to go. Honestly, if we had tried to do this ourselves, we'd still be trying to figure out the paperwork. Instead, we've had the school here for almost 10 years now. And we had an existing daycare, which we decided to make more valuable to the community by accepting vouchers. The city will pay daycare, so they'll give parents a voucher so that they can pursue education and work and help their way out of poverty. And I thought that would be the best way that we could bring a missional stand to our daycare. And so we continue to look and search for different ways where we can partner with the community. Most recently, we have made a deal with the San Antonio Clubhouses, an organization that helps individuals that are living with mental illness find more productive lives. And they're going to be partnering us with a, in the very near future. I look at this as an opportunity to expand our ministry, our calling, without having to add, come up with dollars for it. They have the dollars, they have the expertise. They're going to do everything here, and we'll find ways of supporting them.
We leave you with one of the suggestions found at the end of chapter 4 in Neighborhood Church. Think of a space in your facility that is sorely underutilized. Brainstorm with your group about possible ways it could be integrated for Christ's mission. And we pray this prayer with you, found at the end of the chapter. Loving God, your love extends to all times and places. We thank you for the gift of our church's facilities. Help us as good stewards to invest what you have given us in ways that advance Christ's purposes in our community. Amen.
The piece of that that is most challenging for me is the line, integrated space means that we only share our facility with those who truly want to partner. So it calls for saying no to partnerships that really aren't partnerships, that really don't integrate the use of the facility with the ministry and the mission of the church. Which doesn't mean you kick out all the tenants, right? It means, among other things, sitting down and working with those that you have already shared space relationships with and seeing how you can transform that relationship from just a tenancy, right? They're just extras in your story, and actually bring them into being speaking parts in this is the church's story, right? But the question there, how do we, in the ways that we already cross paths, in the ways that we already share space, how do we create partnerships? That's a question for the church, especially. I think it's a question in our own immediate neighborhoods, too, right? Because we've got these little pieces of shared space that we, you know, we sort of, we are aware of the ways that sort of our property and the property of everybody else actually kind of overlap if you, you know, not from a surveying standpoint, you know, the surveyor would be fired if they can't figure out exactly where the property line is. But the ways that our life and the lives of those we are physically next to actually do overlap and intersect. And that's sort of the, I think that's the question from this, from the perspective of integrating our space. You know, we can have our space just not overlap, or at least not visibly overlap with those around us, right? We can drive into our garage that we didn't even have to get out of the car to open, get out of the car, walk inside the house, remember to push the garage door button on your way into the house, and you never even have to, like, smell fresh air, right? Let alone interact with a neighbor. Now, you know, depending on the weather and your medical conditions, like, sometimes you have to do that, right? The garage door opener is not actually the source of all that is evil in the world. But it is a way to, you know, it's a part of imagining that you don't actually have neighbors, right? That your neighbors, if anything, are extras in your story. So there was a... There was that question that they ended the video with, and they asked it about churches, but that's an easy question to answer for a church, especially as Bev said, we are in fact pretty well utilized here in terms of number of square feet by number of hours, by number of people. We could do more, right? We're not fully utilized, but we're pretty well utilized for practical purposes. But the question, think about a physical space in your life that could be invested in your neighbors. So not a physical space in your building that could be shared with somebody in your community, like this is, that's the church way of asking the question. Think about a physical space in your life that could be shared with your neighbors, invested in your neighbors. What would that look like?
A block party.
Deb's hosting a block party.
All I can do the luncheons for the women.
Yeah.
But, and that came about because one of the students rode the bus and he was left off at the wrong street. Hmm. On 18th, and nobody would help him. And so I had all the ladies come and I said, you don't have to know their names, but you have to know who they are. That they belong in the street. You don't have to let them in the house. Let's have them sit on the step so you aren't accused of anything. And I said, then you call.
Yeah.
Because you hate it. You know, you even think about your dog. Your dog got loose.
Right, yeah. That's right.
Your dog lets you know all the neighbors, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that front step, mm-hmm. that front step is valuable. Yeah, that front step is space that actually can be safely integrated with the needs of your neighbors. Yeah. And part of that means being attentive out those front windows, because if you see that kid get left off the bus at the wrong street and needs someone to attend.
He asked two people on
18th
to help him, two adults, and they said, we don't know where you live.
Right.
And I thought,
right. Yeah.
And his mother was waiting down at the correct stop. Mm-hmm. Not with a car, so she had run back home and get in her car mm-hmm. and start driving, and she called the bus company, the school, and you know, she just wasn't getting any help, and I thought, this is ridiculous when we don't right. even know what the kids look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a piece of, you know, it's not just being like, oh, that's fine, you know, people walk by, but actually paying attention to who's out there, not as threats to you, but as
people who might need something.
And if I get older, I may get lost. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to establish the precedent that if somebody's lost on your street, you'll help them find their way home, because you might need that someday.
Well, just let me interject.
Yeah.
Claudia's dad was widowed, lived in Nevada 6 years as a widower, and 6 years with us. And when he first came, he could walk our dogs. And Claudia, of course, liked having that help. But Apollo was recognized in the neighborhood, and here this elderly man was disoriented and didn't know how to get back to our home.
Yeah.
And I forget who it was. But they recognized that, you know, we just for variety hit different streets. But they got our father, or Claudia's dad, and Apollo back home because they recognized he was lost.
Yeah.
So knowing whose dog belongs where is not all bad.
No. And it does get you to know the neighbors too.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
One of our neighbors, I don't know where she lives, fosters dogs, and we've gotten to know the her own dogs, but she's always got at least one foster as she walks dogs through the neighborhood. She had somewhere, I don't know how long ago this story was, it was before we got to our neighborhood, but she had a dog who was, you know, much beloved and who died, and she partnered with the city to, on a little city park around the corner that used to be an elementary school. The school is gone, but its lot is now a city park. There's a drinking fountain, both up here for people and down there for dogs. So, a little plaque with the dog's name and everything. And, but, you know, that's on public space, you know, legally public space, that this, you know, this sort of, here's kind of a way that she's sharing her purpose with other people. And, you know, my dog has drunk out of that, although it's not very far away, so he doesn't get his stuff. You know, there are also, you know, some of the, like, these are low-hanging fruit things, right? There's somebody farther down our block that has one of the little free libraries in their front yard. You know, there are all of these little sort of ways to say, hey, you know, there's a front yard here. There's space to share. There are even ways to actually sort of move sort of your attention. This is the piece that that had to happen in Beb's case. Somebody had to be looking out the front windows. Some part of their life had to be oriented toward the front sidewalk in order to even notice that this kid was lost, right? That's a piece of integrating your space. You know, even to the extent of, you know, which room do I sit in to have my coffee, right? Do I sit in a place where I have some engagement with the world around me? Do I sit in a place where I'm pulled back from the world around me? Both of those are good things, right? You've got to breathe in and breathe out. But what if a piece of your routine was attentiveness to your neighborhood? What would that look like?
We have a relatively flat driveway at the top of the hill. Mm-hmm. And ages ago, we put in a basketball hoop for our kids, which, since they're long gone, it doesn't get too much use. And but we've taken to mostly in the summer or fall, sitting out on the front porch. And there's a couple little kids down the street who ride their bikes, but then they get up to the top and their driveway slants like that, so they come up the street, and then we worry about them going down the street. They're going to make it. But when we've seen them, and the little their son plays basketball at his house with this smaller hoop. Mm-hmm. So when one time we had our grandsons there, and they were out playing basketball, and this kid saw them, and then came up and played basketball, and we just said, anytime you want to, just come up and use the basket or use the driveway to turn around on your bike or ride your bike is fine. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of gotten around, and as long as there's not a car in anybody's way, then the kids all gravitate toward the basketball hoop and the driveway.
Right.
And that was inadvertent.
Right.
I mean, it was just, you know, that they just saw two other kids up the street.
Right. But now you're that awesome house up the street that lets us play basketball in their driveway.
Right.
And, you know, if one of those kids has a problem, you're somewhere they might go. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
Well, it reminds me of 100 years ago when we used to have the blue star in the window. Do you remember mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. And you would fill that out at school, but it would go through the police department so that you would be acknowledged as being a safe place.
Right.
So there were times when, see, being on the corner too of Ashworth and
that's a great asset,
are,
isn't it?
We put that star in the window and kept it there long after our children were grown.
Right.
I don't think the program exists anymore.
I certainly don't see blue stars in windows
which
anymore.
Is,
I assume the
to
program
me, sad.
Yeah,
right.
The neighborhood watch sign.
Yeah, but that's a sign.
Yeah, no, you're not sure if
you know, one of the things that was so advantageous about it was that when I was home,
yeah,
now there's not as many people home to be blue star, so like for you,
right?
If you'd even had one and the kid knew about it, then it wouldn't have to been where you're looking out the window.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I'm not saying you have to like sit watching out the window and surveil your
block all
the time.
Well, then they'll think you're
weird
anyway.
They may already. You know, but the that piece of, you know, where's my attention and how am I making clear to those around me that I am, you know, reaching toward the neighborhood. So All right, we're going to look next week at, let me count my chapters, chapter 5, Sustaining the Vision. This is going to take probably even more translation than your than this week's chapter did, because it's going to talk about worship, and it's going to talk about leadership development, but it's going to talk about, for us, kind of what's the spiritual layer of this? What's spiritually happening for us in our relationships with our neighborhoods? So, no homework, but get to know somebody in your neighborhood, especially if you haven't yet, because that means you haven't done your old homework. So this is like your catch-up week, so that you can be ready for the final.
Winter's a hard time.
Yeah, winter's a tough time to get to know your neighbors. Also spring and fall and summer. Other than that, it's super easy.
Well, you help your neighbor shovel your driveway. That's what my son did.
Yes.
So he saw one of our neighbors shoveling his driveway, and he said, "I think I'll go out and help shovel his driveway."
So yeah.
That was a nice thought.
Yeah. So if you're
mentioned that, so.
Yeah, so if you're up to shoveling, that is actually a great way to meet at least a few of your neighbors. And I'm not saying meet all your neighbors, right? I'm saying, like, meet one neighbor, and that's more than I can pull off. So so it doesn't have to be a lot. But yeah, shoveling is actually a really cool way to meet your neighbors.
Especially this kind of weather.
And especially in this kind of weather, yeah.
Cool.
Can I interject one thing?
Yeah.
Yesterday at Presbytery, we had a speaker who I thought was outstanding.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But he gave us people from Presbytery and pastors an assignment for this morning. And it was, when you see someone you don't know, go up and introduce yourself and welcome them. Because he said the biggest problem that he's seen is with greeters. A lot of times greeters are just talking to each other and don't even realize it. Today is a great opportunity. You've got
yes.
kids that are singing and their parents are here.
Oh,
and a lot of them are not people that come all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And his comment pretty much was, people are looking for warmth. Covenant's kind of known for that, so just make sure that you see somebody this morning and
make sure you're warm to someone you don't
right.
already know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you're not allowed to already know them.
That's right.
No, this has to be somebody else.
Right. You are permitted to also talk to people you already know, but you're going to do that some other time anyway, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So there you go. You can do your homework before you even leave school.
That's right.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.